When multinationals figure out how not to pay taxes by crossing borders with the money.
This podcast is supported by Netflix Instant Streaming. Thousands of TV episodes and movies on your computer or mobile device instantly streamed by Netflix to save you time, money, and hassle. Free 30-day trial now at netflix.com/APM.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. Leaders from some of the world's rich countries meet in Northern Ireland today for the annual Group of Eight Summit. They'll be talking what's come to be known as tax avoidance. British Prime Minister David Cameron calls it one of the key challenges facing the global economy. For more, we're joined live by Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Morning, Stephen.
Hello, David.
Big issue there. What is the plan?
A twofold plan, an attempt to lift the veil of secrecy, which allows some rich individuals and large corporations to dodge a great deal of tax. First of all, to persuade more financial centres to share information about their customers with tax authorities in different countries. And second, to try and make it clear exactly who or which company owns the assets that are stashed away in tax havens. Prime Minister Cameron says he set a good example. At the weekend, he persuaded 10 British tax havens, these are self-governing territories like Bermuda and the Cayman Islands, to go along with this approach. And he's hoping for the rest of the G8 to sign up to it too.
Because it's absolutely vital to tackling corruption, tackling tax evasion, and also the very aggressive tax avoidance, which is doing damage to our economies.
I have to ask, Stephen, what are the chances anything meaningful will come out of this summit?
Well, whatever does come out of it, it won't directly tackle the really big issue, the hot topic at the moment of large corporations like Apple and Google quite legally putting their profits through low-tax countries like Ireland. But Cameron supporters say a G8 agreement will be another blow against tax evasion and avoidance. And they say more transparency will bring even more public pressure onto big multinationals to pay their fair share of tax.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thank you very much.
Okay, David.
Also up for discussion at the G8, a more united front on Syria's civil war. For some economic context here, most of the oil fields in Syria are in the eastern part of that country. Over the past year, large swaths of this area have slipped out of control of the Syrian regime, but the country's main oil refineries are in the west, still in government hands. That has led thousands of people in eastern Syria to take to refining oil themselves, Marina Olivezi reports.
We're standing just a couple of footsteps away from a barrel of crude oil when Abu Kiram makes a surprising move.
So he just light up a cigarette. It's okay smoking here?
Abu Kiram is nonchalant about it. He says crude oil is too heavy to explode, but he's new to the oil business. The father of nine has been working odd jobs his whole life, mostly farming and transportation. Work in Syria has been scarce the past year. The war has brought entire sectors of the economy to a halt, but here it has also opened up a new opportunity. The Assad regime has controlled the oil industry for decades. When the armed opposition took over, the oil fields in the east were up for grabs. Some were claimed by brigades, others by local tribes, or just regular people like Abu Karam. He says to learn the process, he just mimicked what others were doing. He didn't have to look far. There are dozens of similar makeshift refineries all around. So one day, 3 months ago, he dug a hole, brought a few pipes and a large container.
They heat the container for about 2 hours. Then the fuel flows from the pipes. First benzene, then mazout.
On good days, Abu Kiram makes 5,000 to 6,000 Syrian pounds, about $60. But today is not one of those days.
Today is a loss, because there's a problem. The people who sell the crude oil mixed it with water.
His son Khalil has another problem. The 14-year-old has been working with his dad, so he doesn't have to hire extra help. Khalil hasn't been to school in weeks and has a big test coming up.
He doesn't know anything about his exam, just that he has one on Wednesday.
Then the teenager heads off, his clothes and body covered with soot, and collects the little fuel of the day. In Al-Mayadeen, I'm Marine Olivezi for Marketplace.
Now let's do the numbers. That volatile Nikkei index in Japan went up 2.7% today. The FT100 in London is currently up 0.9%. Stock index futures in the U.S. are all up at the moment.
This podcast is supported by Netflix Instant Streaming. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your computer, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly, streamed now by Netflix, a great value. Netflix Streaming has lots of movie and television options, including past seasons of House of Cards, Breaking Bad, and Arrested Development. Watch them using Netflix Instant Streaming and find thousands of other TV series and movies during your free 30-day trial at Netflix.com/APM.
Next time you nibble a tater tot, consider this. Somebody grew the potato therein, and they wanted a good price for it. As Marketplace's Sarah Gardner reports, potato prices are at the heart of an antitrust lawsuit that's pitting grocers against growers.
The OPEC of potatoes. That's how a wholesale grocers group describes the United Potato Growers of America. It says the co-op conspires to limit U.S. spud production in order to inflate prices. And to make sure farmers don't grow too much, the co-op monitors their fields with satellites and GPS. Growers attorney Randon Wilson wouldn't comment on the methods, but
I know of no grower who has complained about the mechanisms used. You have to get accurate data so that they can match supply to demand.
But law professor Peter Carstensen says there's concern that growers, and not just the potato kind, are abusing certain antitrust exemptions for farmers.
There are cases going on involving eggs, mushrooms, and dairy cattle, all involving the scope of the right of farmers to restrict output.
If spud growers lose this case, they'll owe three times what they allegedly overcharged customers, and that could be no small potatoes. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And I'm aware there are many folks who will have no idea what this is. Morse code, spelling out the words American Public Media. They used to send telegrams that way, but the Christian Science Monitor is reporting that the world's last telegram will be sent in about a month. I suppose many people won't even know what a telegram is. That's when you pay to have a piece of paper delivered with a short message. India's state-owned telecom company, BSNL, of course, has been losing more than $20 million a year on telegrams in a world of email and SMS. I'm Dave Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report on APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.